And now, from the gleaming spires of Chicago, broadcasting to Niflheim, Svartalfheim, Olympus, throughout the nine worlds and beyond, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. You are tuned to the immortal sounds of Radio Free Asgard.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to Radio Free Asgard. This is episode number 163. My name is Tom Harris, and I'm coming at you, as always, from beautiful Chicago, Illinois, where it's starting to feel a little bit like autumn outside. Yeah, we've had a little bit of break from the heat. I'm not, you know, counting on it staying not hot forever, but, you know, usually we get our hottest months in July and August, but, you know, September still gets pretty hot and humid, too. So I'm just kind of hoping that this little respite that we've had over the last couple of days is going to last for a while, and maybe even get, you know, a nice mild fall, nice cool weather. And that's kind of what I'm hoping for, because I hate the heat, folks. I really, really hate the heat. Anyway, so we are going to be continuing our coverage of Loki this week. But before we do that, we have some Facebook comments to read out. And our first comment is from DeYugi Works, and this was a response to a post that I made on Facebook linking to a video by a couple of guys from a podcast that I like to listen to called The Absolute Peach. It's a comedy podcast out of the UK, and I often like their stuff. And they touched on the subject of Thor becoming a woman on one of their recent little short things that they do for YouTube. And DeYugi Works actually commented on that. And he had this to say. He said, not crazy about it. He's talking about Thor becoming a woman. But we will see. The art looks nice. I'm sure all of this has to do with what's going on in the Avengers comics. Incursion, future, original sin stuff. Yeah, I suspect that's true as well. The real question is, why does Thor have so many incarnations? Starting with Donald Blake, Red Norvell, and others. What's up with the Thor power and the Odin power? I guess that's really two questions. My take on the Thor power and Odin power is that they're really the same thing. And I think we've seen in the past, and don't quote me on this, but I seem to recall, and certainly this was established in Thor God of Thunder by Jason Aaron, but the power kind of resides in the ruler of Asgard, and it can move from one person to another. So after Odin abandoned it or died or whatever, it moved on to Thor. And this is established in Thor God of Thunder, where Thor was saying that he'd had the power for far longer than Odin did. And so it was called the Thor power. I don't know. My feeling is that it would kind of move to anybody who was the ruler of Asgard. So when Baldur was the ruler of Asgard, maybe he would get this power as well. And I'm not really sure, because of course I haven't read every Thor issue, so I'm still discovering this stuff too. But it's almost like in the Doctor Strange comic, I don't know if anybody remembers this, but Doctor Strange's girlfriend, Clea, and she was a princess or whatever in her dimension. And when she became the queen of her dimension, she got like this fire thing around her head. You guys remember that? And anybody who had that fire thing around their head, that was the mark of their ruler. And maybe the Odin power, the Thor power, whatever, is the mark of Asgard's ruler. But I think that also, as we've seen in the Loki series, Loki didn't get the power when he became ruler, so it has to be something that is passed on from somebody to the next person. So I don't really know what the deal is either, but I gathered that this is something that can move from one person to the other. And the incarnations of Thor, interesting you should mention that, because we're going to have something about that in this issue of Loki. But to me, I mean, Don Blake was obviously an entity that was created by Odin. And Red Norvell was a rather different character. And I'm just kind of vaguely remembering the story, but I think he was like a part of a documentary team that had gone to Asgard, and they were filming stuff in Asgard. And then some spell got cast on him and turned him into a Thor-like being. I wouldn't really count him as a incarnation of Thor, necessarily. I don't remember him being able to heft Mjolnir or anything like that, though I could be wrong, because it's been years and years and years since I read that story. But I think that a lot of that, of course, you know, it really boils down to, well, it's Asgardian magic. It's what Odin, the spell that Odin cast on the hammer in particular. So we have, you know, Beta Ray Thor, we have Eric Masterson, we have, you know, these other people who were able to lift the hammer and became Thor because of the enchantment. Now, my understanding is that unless they already have an enhanced strength, none of them are going to be as strong as Thor. And I think that was the case with Beta Ray Bill. I mean, Beta Ray Bill was a biologically engineered being who was already super strong when he got the hammer. So as a result, he became as powerful or maybe even more powerful than Thor. Whereas if somebody like Captain America, you know, got the hammer, they wouldn't necessarily be, because their power would be coming from this enchantment and not from actually being Thor. Because I think that being Thor counts for an awful lot. And I mean, that's just kind of my take on it. But anyway, Diyugi Works, thank you very much for your comment. Our next comment is from Neil Stanifer. Now, Neil is commenting on the last episode. He says, "The Flighting of Loki was one of my favorite episodes so far." Well, thank you very much. "I first fell in love with Norse lore while very young, and Loki was my favorite character, keeping me company on many a long bus ride to school." Well, okay. "This particular legend has always been one of my favorites, especially when placed besides the boasting contests in texts like Beowulf. I also love the way the fighting legend displays the differences between the clever Loki and the dull-witted Thor as they appear in Norse lore. The fighting is also part clip show, offering tantalizing recaps of many other myths as it rolls along through its gloriously cutting insults." Great choice. Well, thank you very much. And of course, I kind of explained my reasoning behind doing that last issue. Neil goes on to say that the fighting is the season finale before the TV movie entitled Ragnarok. I guess you could say that. There's a piece missing, though, and a kind of an important piece that's missing before Ragnarok, and that's, of course, is the binding of Loki, and we'll talk about that on another show. But yeah, I kind of like that kind of comparison here that we have. Of this is really kind of the legend wrapping up. This is the end of Loki's story arc. I suppose you could make the binding of Loki as a part of the Ragnarok story, but it really doesn't fit there either. So as we're going through these myths, and as we're coming, unfortunately, closer and closer to the end of the Norse mythology, I am saving Ragnarok till last. In case anyone's wondering, I'm not going to just kind of go and put Ragnarok in the middle of everything. There is a lot more to come. So, yeah, stay tuned because we'll be covering all of it. Anyway, so with that, we do have an issue of Loki to cover. So let's go ahead and move along to our review.
"Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold
But not really, because we're going to be covering Loki number 3. This book was cover dated October of 2004, retailed for $3.50, $5 if you're in Canada, which just goes to show that they love to rip the Canadians off. Cover art is by Ised Rebic, shows Loki versus Thor. And it's interesting how all of these cover images are really kind of part of the same fight, or maybe even the same fight, the same poses almost from different angles. It's kind of a very little difference between these various poses, but of course, beautiful, beautiful artwork here from Ised Rebic. This one is kind of a frontal shot of Thor and Loki standing before him with a spear pointed at Thor's dick, and Thor kind of lunging forward, getting ready to smack Loki down with his hammer, and they're fighting in a snowbank or something. And again, Thor has these weird black and white socks, which I really don't get. He also has this kind of a weird collar on his tunic, which, it doesn't look quite right to me, but it's still a gorgeous piece of artwork. Very Frazetta-ish. We get on the second page, we get a recap again, previously in Loki number 2. "Return with us to Asgard of the Gleaming Spires, a celestial nexus bestrode by gods, now overturned and made anew. Such revolution was ever the aim of Loki, the trickster god and prince of lies. Once heir to far-off Jotunheim, land of the frost giants, Loki was taken from that defeated race by its conqueror, Odin Allfather, who made of him a foster son. But in every manly virtue, Loki paled beside Odin's true son, Thor, god of thunder, who joined all in the court in mockery and disdain of him. Now at last Loki himself is all-father. Odin languishes in chains, as do all who did battle in his name. Such is Loki's vengeance for the murder of his father, Laufey, and for the misery of his own thwarted life thereafter. And yet, the fruits of this accomplishment are bitter on his tongue. His revenge taken, his plots and schemes behind him, he finds he has no taste for the petty routine of rule. He is besieged on all sides by courtiers, ministers, supplicants, favor-seekers, and former allies seeking reward. He is accosted as well by Hela, goddess of the netherworld, who urges him to conclude his triumph by executing the Thunder God. And yet there is more to pall his triumph. Balder the Brave, defiant despite his chains, reveals that he has walked the rim of infinity, oh my, and seen countless other Asgards, and in each Loki is destined but to rile, never to rule. Disturbed by this premonition of failure, Loki summons Carnilla, queen of the Norns, to conjure forth these other Lokis to confirm both their existence and their fates. Robert Rohde was the writer, because he wrote it. Isad Rebic was the artist, Corey Pettit was the letterer, John Misegues and Corey Settlemeyer are the assistant editors, Axel Alonso was the editor, Joe Quesada was the editor-in-chief, and Dan Buckley was the publisher. And we get a shot here in the splash of a giant scaffolding, which seems to be getting built in the middle of some sort of very Greek-looking square. And we hear the voice of somebody saying, "It will not do." And we get to the next page and we see that it's Loki and he's kind of looking out over the scaffolding from the window of his palace. I actually like the design that they're making. I mean, it is kind of Greekish in the designs of some of these buildings, but at the same time, it's not very sci-fi. And I have this thing for preferring Asgard to be more medieval than sci-fi. Loki is saying, "The work proceeds too slowly. It must be finished ere dawn. Have you so instructed the workers?"
"Yes, my lord," says somebody. "But forgive me, your command to erect the scaffold came not 4 hours hence, in view of which the progress has been remarkable."
"Remarkable, yet insufficient. I have promised that Thor, my brother, will die at sunrise, and so he shall. If he does not, those who have delayed his execution will share in it at a later hour. Please convey this to the foreman."
"Yes, my lord. Excuse me, my lord."
And the guy is still following Loki, and Loki, figures he has something else to tell him, so he's like,
"Have you more to say?"
"Just, my lord, the matter of the Rainbow Bridge, it remains unprotected, and thus does Asgard lie vulnerable to invasion by outward realms. There is no one fit to guard the bridge save noble Heimdall, who for his part swears that were you to release him, he would perform that function and no other, his loyalty being to Asgard itself and not to any faction."
"Heimdall must think me a fool. He is the Lady Sif's brother, and shares her love of treachery. No, on the matter of the bridge, my decision is thus."
And he takes a big gulp of wine or something.
"Destroy it."
And tosses the cup aside. And this guy can't believe what he's hearing. He says,
"What, my lord? Destroy the Rainbow Bridge?"
Well, that sounds like they haven't done it before.
"Why not? Asgard is self-sufficient. What need have we for traffic with other realms? Go, see to it. Order it done coincident with my brother's execution. I shouldn't like any of his Midgard cronies coming after me in revenge. Oh, and while you are about it, summon Carnilla. Tell her I grow weary of waiting."
And Loki picks up a pig face on the end of his knife and bites into his snout with what few teeth he has, which is kind of gruesome, actually. And then there's a kind of a yellowish-greenish glow. And we've shifted scenes here, and we're in a different place in the palace, apparently. Loki is here, and also Carnilla, the Norn Queen, and there's this giant glowing cauldron sort of pot thing standing in front of them. And Carnilla's complaining here.
"Wish you would not hurry me so, Lord of Asgard. A conjuration of this magnitude is not approached as hastily as some petty spell or potion."
"Spare me your groanings, Norn Queen. and show me what I crave to see.
As you wish, but let me first caution you, Loki Laufeyson, that no man or god is of sufficient greatness to pierce the veil between essences without risk of retribution.
Retribution? From whom?
And there is like a giant cloud in the room, and there's lightning kind of cascading around it, and we see that Carnilla is silhouetted through her clothes. So you kind of see her naked form underneath the clothes, and Loki's kind of being thrown back by the lightning and stuff shooting out of the cauldron.
If I knew that, Lord of Asgard, I would be a very great sorceress indeed. Be silent, please, and allow me to continue.
Impressive, Carnilla, but I require more from you than mere pyrotechnics.
And there's a full-page spread here of Carnilla, and she's doing some kind of spell, and there's lots of, I don't know, mist, and you kind of see some forms emerging out of the mist, some kind of warriors or something, and she's saying something in runes, which I'm sure is some sort of a cryptogram, but I'm not going to try to translate it. If anybody knows where it's translated, let me know, and I'll tell you what it says. So Loki and Carnell are looking at these images that are forming in the mist, and she says,
"Behold, Lord Loki, you would see whether there exist others akin to you beyond this plane you now rule."
And we see images of various Thors and various Lokis. You have one guy that's all like in bird armor, got a kind of medieval-looking Thor. We have another, they're kind of the red-bearded classic Thor, bare-chested, and we have a kind of a Tom Hiddleston-looking Loki, and then we have another Loki that is like little devil horns, and he's all painted red, and then we have a more traditional Viking Loki with a like headband and beard, and kind of looks like Old Man Thor a little bit from Thor: God of Thunder. And then we have a trickster like Raven or something from Native American mythology. It's like all covered in feathers and stuff. And another like glowing, evil, green, glowing sort of Loki. And Carnell is saying,
"Look well, for even now they stand before you."
And we have seen here of another full page spread. We get a very classic Marvel looking Loki, kind of glowing, and then we have like Thor and Loki, and they looks like they've been turned into trees, which I guess would be divine retribution for all those trees that Thor's destroyed. We have like a chalk white Thor and a ebon black Loki, and they're kind of running around naked here. And the clouds are very phallic, I have to say.
"An army of Lokis, a multitude of Thors, from a seemingly infinite array of Asgards. Does your heart leap or break at the sight of them, my lord?"
"Neither, but I would know what fate awaits them."
"You ask much, yet it is not beyond my ability."
And she summons up an image of one of the Lokis is tied to a rock, and there's a serpent over him. And this is the classic image of the Binding of Loki here. The serpent dripping venom from his fangs, and this woman holding a bowl and catching the venom in the bowl.
"The fate of Loki, every Loki, is that which you see before you. For his crimes, the god of mischief is chained for eternity to a rock, over which suspends a poisonous worm. Loki's devoted lady keeps the beast's venom from his face, but alas, she must on occasion pause to empty her dish, during which time..."
And you see like this venom dripping into the Loki's eyes, and Loki's going,
"Enough!"
says Loki, and he kicks over the cauldron, and he's breaking the images.
"Thus did I warn you, my lord. There is no more bitter burden than to know oneself less than unique, nor any greater curse than to foresee one's final fate. Still, I have done what was asked of me, and now I do demand my reward."
"Do not ignore me, Laufeyson, lest worse befall you."
And Loki has this really horrified look on his face, and he goes running off through the palace and is running to try to escape what's going on. And then we shift scenes to the outskirts of Asgard City. We have, sort of this very mosque-looking kind of building here, and the Rainbow Bridge we see kind of arcing towards the city. And we have this hooded figure that we saw in Jotunheim is moving closer and closer. And this giant has entered the city, and he's going,
"Loki!"
Normal Asgardians are like in the market or whatever, selling bowling balls or coconuts or something. And they're like, you seek the Conqueror? You must hie yourself to that place. Therein he resides.
Loki, I draw near.
And we have another shift back to the palace, and Loki founds the warden of the prison. And he's like, warden.
My word, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were here.
My apologies for startling you. I require again the use of your keys, upon receipt of which I will leave you to conclude your meal in peace.
And Loki takes the keys, and he's venturing down into the dungeons with a torch in hand. And he comes upon a cell, and we see, kind of gazing in through the cell. And it is, of course, Thor's cell, and Thor's still hanging there like he was before, except that his head appears to have become even smaller. And Loki is kind of taunting him a little bit.
Behold the God of Thunder. If I am to credit brave Baldur and the Norn Queen, he is the chosen arm of destiny and must triumph over Loki in every place that Loki is. Must I accept this? Must I believe that from this abject state my brother can and will rally? That from this depth of misery he is destined to rise to even greater heights? I cannot deny that he has ever confounded probability.
And we get a kind of a flashback here, and it's Thor and Loki fighting in the snow. And again, this is very similar to what we've been seeing on the covers. Thor and Loki are talking while they're fighting.
Relent, Loki. I am and ever will be more than a match for such as you.
In arrogance, you have no equal, it is true. And therein lies your weakness. You see me as a naught but a nuisance, yet I am much...
Ah, yes. I have heard that you now style yourself God of Evil, fool. It requires more than self-designation for a petty prankster to pass as... Eh?
And Loki trips Thor and kicks him off a cliff. He's like, Loki! No, like Darth Vader. And Loki is saying,
such as I said, arrogance.
And then there's this... big explosion of lightning and all that, and Loki's walking away, and he sees a shadow and he's like, hmm? And it turns out, of course, to be Thor, and Thor's come smashing up out of the cliff.
A worthy attempt, brother. Alas, Thor is not to fear from any storm, be it of wind or rain or fire.
And we get to get a close-up of Thor's eyes there. And then we're back in the cell. And, the flashback is done, and Loki is still talking.
A thousand battles, all ending in the same manner. Thor triumphant, Loki vanished.
And he unlocks the door of the cell and enters into the cell, and he confronts Thor. He says, Thor, look at me. We can't tell whether Thor is actually looking at him or not.
I must credit the evidence of my eyes. Thor is brought low for the final time. Long years of victory do not preclude eventual defeat. And what of those other Lokis? Are they not this one? Let them writhe in agony beneath a worm's vile spittle. I'll have none of it. Nor can I be sure they exist at all. Both worthy Baldur and ever fickle Carnilla would take pleasure in causing me doubt. Can they have conspired to place this nettle within my nest? I'll defy them both, and not allow it further thought. As Lord of Asgard, I must look forward, not back.
And he closes the door behind him. And we see Thor there in the dark. And then we notice him flexing his muscles and looking up. And we see Thor's eye, because they did really do have this thing about eyes in this. And Loki is coming up out from where the cells are. And there's a guard there. And we come up with Lady Frigga. And she's looking very, very old and doddery here. And Loki's like,
Mother, what business have you here?
Address me, please, as Lady Frigga. I'll acknowledge no near relation to you, sir.
Oh, of course not. It being amusing to claim maternity to Loki only when you might abuse the position by denying him all affection. Alas, I am beyond such small betrayals now, Mother.
And he goes to caress her face, and she's like,
You're unnatural. Do not touch me.
Unnatural, my lady?
What word, then, for a mother who denies her suckling babe her breast?
I did not bear you. My breast had no nourishment to offer you.
I spoke metaphorically, but let's not quarrel. Better that you make reply to my earlier inquiry. What business have you here?
I have been to see my husband, your father, ungrateful one.
Ah, but how can he be my father if you are not my mother? Never mind, just tell me how the old warrior fares.
Better yet, I'll go ask him myself.
And Loki goes stalking off towards where they're keeping Odin prisoner, which, of course, looks like another jail cell, except he's not all chained up the way Thor is. And Loki enters, and there's this pink glow coming from inside. And there's like a small cell, and Odin's there sitting on a stool and has a, you know, basically a jail cell, but a lot fancier than Sif's or Thor's.
Well, I must admit, no small surprise, my son. I had not thought to see you in this place.
No? And why is that?
Why, because of the shame you must feel before me.
Shame? The word has no meaning for me. Dangle a joint of beef before a starving dog, when that hound, after long hours of begging, finally savages you and takes the meat, and your arm besides. Must it feel shame, or something closer to victory?
I have utterly failed in you.
No, father. I am not so easily fooled as that. I know, as you have always known, that you have succeeded with me most admirably.
I do not take your meaning.
Oh, do you not? You slew my true father on the field of battle.
And we're getting a scene here of the fight between the Asgardians and the giants.
I do not deny it. I defeated Laufey according to the rules of engagement. There was no dishonor in it for him or for me.
Indeed. What did the rules of engagement say about kidnapping your victim's son?
It was to honor Laufey that I took you as my own. You were a true prince, heir to an honored warrior.
I was more than that, Allfather. I was a means to an end for you, was I not?
Do not riddle me so. If your festering mind holds an accusation, let out with it.
Simply this, then. How best to make a hero? Give him a means by which he might define himself, so set up a field of black against which his white shall be yet more blinding.
You speak of Thor.
And he is looking very much like Santa Claus in this picture.
You speak of Thor! Ho, ho, ho!
Yes, I speak of Thor, my stepbrother, filled with energy and ambition. How to mold him according to your will.
And we see that Odin looks like he's been whipped, and he's got like these big scars on his back, and some of them are bleeding.
Why, mold a villain alongside him. Take into your bosom a small and helpless babe. Prod him with temptation. Reward him with ridicule. Expect the very worst from him and refuse to see any good, lest it flourish thereby.
You are deranged.
Am I? Then look at me, father, and tell me plain that I was not brought to your court for the sole purpose of galvanizing Thor's goodness.
And we have Odin, this kind of looks down and is hiding his face.
I understand you now, but you do not yet understand me. In demonizing me, you have outwitted yourself. I am Laufey's revenge. Of late I have been told that I am a prisoner of fortune, that the forces which created me are inviolate across many realms, and thus those whom it uses are exempt from blame for their role in the tragedy of my life. And yet I myself am ever to be held guilty for my own actions, which by the laws of the cosmos I am helpless to change or alter. No matter the crimes committed against me, it is only I who will be called criminal. I reject this outright, and I have proved that the laws of the cosmos are not so immutable as I have been told. I now rule Asgard. I have ceased to be the trickster, and am henceforth lord of all. And those who have had a hand in the making of my misery will not escape my righteous judgment. Thor, my brother, is to die at sunrise. And you, stepfather, slayer of my true father, you are to watch him.
And how will you do this thing, Loki? The God of Thunder is not so easily dispatched.
I will cut off his head. Let us see him survive that.
And Loki goes wandering off. So Loki decides to go outside, and he's got his staff in his hand, and he's going out, and the doors of the palace are open, and it's all bright outside, and there's people out there, and guards, and a lot of people with the spears and stuff. And one of the guards is like, "Make way! Make way for your lord!" "I said make way, villain! Or Herc!" And the giant that we saw coming to Asgard has grabbed his guard by his clothing and says, "Loki! Loki at last!
Who are you to so defy the Lord of Asgard?"
And the giant removes their hood, and while they're removing their hood, they're talking.
"I am one who has better right to see ye than any who yet live, my child. I am Farbauti of Jotunheim, your mother."
And we see that it's a female giant, and we have "To be concluded." And that is Loki, number 3. And, of course, I do have a few words to say about that, but we will hear that right after this message.
Hey, Kids Comics!
Hey, Michael!
Yeah?
We need to do a new promo.
A new one?
A new one.
Why?
Because we've moved.
Moved?
Moved. We've moved to a new place. We still read comics.
We do. We still talk about comics.
Because you can't do a comic book podcast unless you read and talk about comics, because that's kind of stupid. But now, we have a new episode still available every Thursday, but at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
Hey, Kids Comics!
So remember, Hey, Kids Comics has moved to twotruefreaks.libsyn.com. Still, every Thursday. That'll do, won't it?
And we're back. So to be perfectly honest, I really don't have all that much to say about this issue. Once again, we have magnificent artwork by Esad Rebic. This is way better than anything he was doing in Thor: God of Thunder. And just gorgeous, gorgeous writing by Bob Rohde. I think that Rohde really gets Loki as a character, and I think that really, really shows in his storytelling in this. Now, they keep on kind of pounding this drum here of the futility of Loki, that he's always going to be a loser, blah, blah, blah. And maybe a little bit too much. This is a thematic thing, I know, and they're trying to think, okay, well, maybe this Loki is going to be different, because it seems as though he's having a change of heart in all this. We have a little bit of a glimmer of humanity in Loki. We understand why his hatred of his brother now. We have this idea that there's some affection there for his brother, and he's maybe not so quick to want to kill him. And you can kind of see what's coming here in issue 4. I definitely get the real sense that what we're looking at here is we're going to see the fulfillment of what we've been talking about throughout this issue of the, you know, in all the different realities, Loki is not the ruler. He's the one who is the Riler. And I like that turn of phrase in that. I really enjoyed seeing the alternate versions of Thor and Loki. That was one of the coolest parts of this issue for me. And that comes as a longtime comics fan who has always loved this idea of multiple Earths and multiple realities and having more than one version of a particular character. And I go back to, you know, the JLA-JSA team-ups of my youth, where you had, you know, two Supermen, two Batmen, two Robin, you know, that kind of thing. And I really like it here, and you can see the differences in the way the characters are portrayed. And of course, it's all true. I mean, you have versions of Thor elsewhere in the literary universe other than comics, and you have, you know, of course, the original mythology, and you have various versions of Thor, like in the Ragnarok comic, and of course the upcoming Ragnarok comic, which is something completely different. And so I really, really enjoyed seeing that, and that was a really, really effective storytelling device, in my opinion. All right, so with that, it's about time to wrap up the show. So once again, thanks very much, folks, for listening. If you want to email us, you can do so. The email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Just look for the Radio Free Asgard group on Facebook, and you will find us. All right, so until next week, thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next time here on Radio Free Asgard. Radio Free Asgard is copyright Tom Harris USA Productions, which is totally responsible for its content. The Mighty Thor and all related characters are copyright Marvel Comics. Any other characters that appear on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders. We don't own any of this as much as we'd like to. The stories covered on this podcast are for entertainment, educational, and review purposes only. If you like what you've heard on today's program, please tell your friends, drop an iTunes review, or join our Facebook group. Music from Eden, The Invincible Sword of the Elfsmith, is copyright Mott's Vent and is used with permission because Mott's is simply awesome. Radio Free Asgard should not be downloaded while pregnant, nursing, or operating heavy machinery, and we are not responsible for any damages incurred as the result of this misuse. Side effects may include being lost in a cave and finding a magical hammer and falling in love with Jane Foster. Once again, thank you for listening to Radio Free Asgard.